Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Clayton Swisher, who's the manager of investigative journalism for Al Jazeera, based in Doha, Qatar. He's the author of The Truth About Camp David and The Palestine Papers, The End of the Road, based on 1,600 files of leaked confidential records of the Israeli-Palestinian peace talks entrusted to him and published by Al Jazeera and The Guardian in 2011. He has an article at the Huffington Post, Isn't It Time to Try Something New? Welcome to Background Briefing, Clayton Swisher.
Thanks a lot, Ian.
And the opinions you're about to express are yours, right? Not necessarily those of Al Jazeera.
Definitely not.
So let me ask you then about Tuesday's Senate Foreign Relations hearing, where Secretary of State Kerry really did get grilled, and his colleague, or perhaps former colleague, Senator John McCain of Arizona, really got under his skin by saying, in terms of the Middle East peace talks that appear to be in collapse, he says to Kerry, you're about to hit the trifecta, failure to reach a political settlement in Syria, failure to strike a nuclear deal with Iran, and the collapse of talks between the Israelis and the Palestinians, to which Kerry said, well, it's a tough issue, and glaring at his former colleague said, but your friend Teddy Roosevelt also said the credit belongs to the people in the arena who are trying to get things done. You know, this arena that he's talking about, it's called the peace talks or the peace process, but it's about process. It's not about peace. And that's why I find your article refreshing. That, you know, it's a sort of wake-up call. You know, who are we kidding here?
Well, I appreciate that, Ian. Well, I guess my thought would be that Senator McCain is in the same arena as John Kerry, whether he recognizes it or not, because the U.S. Senate is very part of the enabling of the continuation of the Arab-Israeli conflict by giving unqualified military and financial aid to the Israelis. So, you know, whether, you know, he's turned this into a partisan issue from what you've just described by, you know, saying that this is going to be their failure, but this has been a bipartisan failure over the last several decades. Republican and Democrat have been wholly, I wouldn't say worthless, because that would imply that they didn't do any harm. They've been wholly ineffective. And not only resolving the conflict, but worse off, they've made it so that a two-state solution most probably isn't possible by decades of heavily biased mediation, which is, you know, why I wrote the article I did.
So does this come down to the fact that this process needs adult supervision? In other words, you know, if you got two drunks in an alley trying to slash each other with broken beer bottles, somebody has to referee, right? I mean, the honest broker, which is supposed to be the referee, is really what's absent and has been absent here, I take it.
Yeah, it's remarkable. We're a country of 313 plus million people, yet we have the same tired retreads that served, you know, under the Reagan administration, under the Clinton administration, under the Bush administration. They cycle in and out, and they have the same pro-Israeli views. They write about how America must give unqualified support to Israel, that we can never be seen as pressuring them. They write position papers and think tanks that condemn the Arab side, and then they're invited into high-level national security posts where they're making the very policy that they were writing about from the outside. It just begs the question of why one has to have staunch pro-Israel credentials to represent U.S. national security in a part of the world that has profound implications for American homeland security. I don't think the public knows that to be a mediator in the Arab-Israeli conflict, you virtually have no chance unless you have worked for AIPAC, WINEP, or a think tank that has strong pro-Israeli views. And that level of bias has served neither the United States nor the Arabs, but you know, one could easily argue neither has it served Israel, as they have, you know, taken on apartheid-like features, and again, as I said, the two-state prospect is as distant and, you know, arguably remote as possible.
So, in effect, you're arguing that the United States ends up talking to itself because its negotiators are sort of pre-cleared by Israel, and most of the top slots in the National Security Council and the key positions in state and defense seem to be given to those that pass the AIPAC test. I mean, a perfect example of that would be the Dean of American Diplomacy, Ambassador Chaz Freeman, who by all accounts is one of the most brilliant ambassadors the United States has ever had. He was the translator between Richard Nixon and Mao Zedong at those secret talks in China that brought about the rapprochement with China. He was a former ambassador to Saudi Arabia, and he was nominated by President Obama to head up the National Intelligence Council and was run out of town because the fact that he spoke Arabic as well as Mandarin Chinese was a strike against him, for God's sake. I mean, this is how bizarre it is.
How dare he learn a critical language that Americans desperately need to know? I mean, I happen to know Ambassador Friedman quite well from my years in Washington, and you're absolutely right. He's remarkably intelligent and, one of the most capable people that could have filled that job, and it absolutely came down to the Israel lobby putting out a campaign against him, not unlike the way they did Senator Hagel, which was the most brazen attempt by the lobby that I've seen to try to derail a confirmation. They've organized over the decades, and they're very effective at torpedoing the career of anyone who doesn't swear absolute fealty to Israel. And by Israel, they mean the Likud party. And, this is the time that now, if we don't, if Secretary Kerry says it's time to take stock of the process, well, that includes looking back at these last several decades of what has not worked and what has really not worked, because nothing has worked. And the constant you'll see throughout that is biased U.S. mediation, and mediation that is biased heavily in favor of Israel. And I said in my article in the Huffington Post, when I researched for my book on Camp David, I interviewed several Israelis who told me that the U.S. bias at the negotiating table actually hurts them. One, the Arabs are always suspicious. They don't actually trust the U.S. as a neutral, unbiased broker. But it creates different bargaining relationships where, at some times, the United States will, in some instances, outdo the Israelis or try to outdo the Israelis in positions that are unhelpful. And I think that was seen at Camp David, where some of the American mediators were less ready to see Israeli concessions on, for example, the issue of Jerusalem than the Israelis themselves. So this is them trying to be more Catholic than the Pope, so to speak. And for the Arabs, you got to say this is maddening. They're turning to the world superpower who enables this conflict, who keeps them, the Israelis protected at the UN Security Council, and they're hoping to see a little bit of even-handedness. They don't see anything of the sort. If they're going to take pause, and what I wrote was they should meditate on the past failures and try to mediate new ones. That's exactly what Senator Kerry needs to do. He needs to take a hard look at his team, ask himself, why did he bring in these failed retreads, and where is he getting his advice from? And frankly, I didn't get a chance to write this in the space of 700 words, but we're in 2014. The four core issues of the Arab-Israeli conflict have been kicked around long enough with Jerusalem, border security, and refugees. It's time that the United States put down a position, and I mean put it down and publish it on the internet, and say, right, this is the 1967 border. This is our position on it, on Jerusalem, on security, on refugees. This is where we stand. It's a take it or leave it. And if they leave it, then they can chart their own path. But we keep going this method of going with the Israelis, seeing if they'll reject it first. Of course they do. The Palestinians then, don't trust what we present to them. We need to have our own independent ideas. They need to incorporate the last several decades of negotiations.
Again, I'm speaking with Clayton Swisher, who's the manager of investigative journalism for Al Jazeera, based in Doha, Qatar. He's the author of The Truth About Camp David and The Palestine Papers, The End of the Road, based on 1,600 files of leaked confidential records of the Israeli-Palestinian peace talks entrusted to him and published by Al Jazeera and The Guardian in 2011. He has an article at the Huffington Post, Isn't It Time to Try Something New? Now, in terms of the files that were leaked to you, the 1,600 files of confidential records of the Israeli-Palestinian peace talks, known as the Palestine Papers, they, of course, in a sense, from my recollection, was a kind of a plague on both their houses. I mean, it didn't do the Palestinians. They certainly didn't come out in a good light, too, in terms of just on the surface. If you've been at this thing for decades and gotten nowhere, then maybe you need a new team. I mean, it reminds me of that adage of Einstein's, if you keep repeating the same thing, expecting a different outcome, that's a definition of, well, let's say at least failure. So,
well, no, it's insanity. I mean, they had also a heavily pro-Israel team under the Bush administration. The Palestinians, as seen in the Palestine paper, were under the cloud of 9/11 American policy, which was, you better act like good Arabs and show that you're with us rather than against us. And so this led to a lot of fear in the Palestinian negotiating position, and I would say even bending towards American concessions and Israeli concessions in ways that hadn't been done under Yasser Arafat. And it still wasn't good enough for the Israelis. Saab Erekat, who resigned as a result of this leak, was quoted as telling Tzvi Lipny, who's the chief negotiator till today, that we're offering you the largest Jerusalem ever. What more do you want? And what they wanted more of course, was settlements, which they continue to grow until now. So the Israelis, even now, they try to get the Palestinians caught up in these rhetorical battles, as recognize us as a Jewish state, et cetera. But they won't tell us to recognize their boundaries. They won't tell the Americans what they want their boundaries to be, because they keep growing them, and the United States allows them to grow these boundaries. So it's clear that they're not willing to resolve the conflict, and that they want to continue growing their state. And this is what came through in the Palestine papers. Even as they were negotiating, the Israelis were continuing to build settlements. The Palestinians complained. The Americans turned a tin ear. What came through, particularly to the Arab audience, was the amount of and the level of concessions the Palestinians made that hadn't been made before, and it still wasn't good enough for the Israelis. So we can imagine now what those conversations sound like. I mean, the starting point isn't 2000, of course. The starting point was what was discussed under President Bush's tenure, and you can only imagine that under Netanyahu, that those positions have been further eroded and reduced. And it begs the question of whether, if there isn't strong American leadership, is there even going to be a plan that any Arab would accept? Mahmoud Abbas is well beyond his term and has dubious popularity and credibility, having expired his term as president. So you have to wonder if they do strong arm a deal through on the Palestinian side, whether the public will accept it in any way. And again, this is owing to, years of trying the same thing, the same biased mediation, the same auto deference to the Israeli side, and expecting a different result.
So, Clayton Swisher, you mentioned Tzipi Livni, the justice minister and the Israeli government's chief negotiator with the Palestinians. She has already blamed Uri Ariel, the housing minister, for deliberately scuttling and sabotaging this latest round of peace talks by building these extra 700 settlements. And she also has complained that too much time is wasted negotiating with Americans rather than Palestinians. So it seems to me that not only is there a sense of futility on the Palestinian side or questioning the process on the Palestinian side, there's also at least some people on the Israeli side questioning the process.
That's right. I mean, the fact is the Israelis need a process right now to provide a fig leaf to the rest of the world. Otherwise, they're on the ropes getting beat up. There's a BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement that's gaining traction, not just across Europe, but in the United States, particularly in the European Union. And if the Israelis can't say that they're negotiating in good faith, then much of the world's criticism it bears down on them at a time when they want the world to cooperate with them on things like Iran. So they need this fig leaf. And the United States has so far been the only one to step up to it and been providing Israel the cover to continue its actions. And it begs the question why. President Obama is in his second term. He's not facing a re-election. So no one's going to say things that are going to hurt him politically, because he's already been president twice at this point, and the Constitution doesn't allow more. So one would think that he's able and free of domestic political constraints to take bold peacemaking steps, but what we see is, maybe indifference, maybe sympathy, but he's not acting on it. There's a time to call a spade a spade. And Secretary Kerry, I think, came, my analysis from his remarks in the Senate, whereas he came as close to calling a spade by saying, when the Israelis announced the settlements, poof, that was it. That's as close as the United States will ever come to blaming Israel for anything. But of course, you could argue that he's saying it in a territory, the U.S. Congress, which is the most pro-Israeli territory in the United States, that, you know, no one really cares.
Israeli negotiator is saying the same thing. So can't we quote her? Can't the American press quote the Israeli justice minister and negotiator who's saying exactly what Kerry's saying? She's blaming the housing minister.
If the U.S. Congress didn't know that it was Tzvi Livni saying that they would probably call her an anti-Semite. I mean, that's just how ridiculous and that's how lacking in knowledge the U.S. Congress has become on this issue and how just sophomoric they are in their approach to, like I said, core national security items. The Arab-Israeli conflict is a key incubator for anger directed at the United States across the Arab and Muslim world. It's not just the Middle East. It's from Malaysia to Mali. And it's not the sole reason. No, it's not. But it's a major one in terms of looking at it like pollution. Addressing this is going upstream to the source of the smokestack. And the United States it's incredible. After 9/11, there was no credible review of what American policies do to cause people to hate us. Rather, we just waged more war against people and fought them wherever we could find them, but without making any adjustments in our policies because, you know, God forbid that would be seen as a capitulation or kowtowing to the enemy. But it's silly. One would think that we had passed that era as the Bush years came to a close, but really we've not acted on any self-diagnosis of what the past American Middle East policy failures have been, and that's because we keep recycling the same retreads, people with bad ideas. It's like it's required to be an appointee in any political administration. I'm not talking about career diplomats. I'm talking about the appointees on Middle East policy. You must be pro-Israeli, and you must be consistently wrong to assume a position in any administration. It's farcical.
So just in the last couple of minutes then, Clayton Swisher, let's turn to the latest news in terms of these tenuous and arguably collapsed peace talks, or at least the latest round of this process, which is really about a process, not about peace. Yuval Steinitz, the Israeli intelligence minister, has told in an interview with the UK Telegraph, has said that if the Palestinian leadership cancels its application to join 15 international conventions, then they could make a deal, but only if the Americans were to free Jonathan Pollard. So we're back to square one. the reason that Kerry gave in on Pollard was that he's only got a year and a half to go, and this was something that would be helpful to Netanyahu to placate his right flank. But here's the right flank coming back, and it seems to me that if Netanyahu is really serious about this process, he could reform a coalition with the left and with Livni and company. But he's still clearly happy with his right-wing coalition because that's where he's really at.
Well, here's my thoughts on this. On canceling the applications, there's going to be a return to sender. Now that he's mailed it to the UN, he's going to ask them to just pretend they didn't get it. Politically, how's he going to do that?
I should have mentioned this. The quid pro quo is the release of 26 prisoners. And that's...
Okay, well, yeah. I don't think 26 prisoners are going to matter at this point. If a boss is already on the ropes politically, if having called all the cameras in the world to come and watch him sign these 15 applications, he now reneges. It's not just his people who won't take him seriously. It's all those 15 international bodies who are expecting to receive and process his application. So that's the first thing. That he'd basically be saying that, no, I didn't mean it. We're not really ready to be a state yet. The bigger issue here, though, is what's the threat here? The threat, the international community, the United States, the Israelis, they call on Palestinians to reject all forms of violence. Okay, fine. They call on them to not resist the occupation that is violent and canceling their freedom and their rights. But at the same time, when they go to pursue legal measures, we're talking legal. This is using lawyers and diplomats. Nonviolent legal instruments like the United Nations and the courts, they're terrified. It's as if they're holding a gun to their collective head. And the reason for this is, of course, because of accountability and the sunlight that this will bring onto their activities. and the implications it'll have under international law that they fear. And so why the United States would be against anyone asserting their UN-protected legal rights, it's incredible. It is incredible, and it's hypocritical to those Hobbesian values that Americans are supposed to stand for, life, liberty, and property, that we would deny another people their ability to make claims and to seek legal means to defend their life, their liberty, their property. Of course, with the Pollard release, I mean, this is again farcical. Why is the United States considering releasing a man convicted of spying against a devastating disclosure to Israel in the 1980s? This is in Israel's interest to have a peace process. The United States should not, one would think, be asked to throw in sweeteners like releasing a person who did devastating intelligence damage. And not only that, based as an analyst looking at the U.S. intelligence community, they've taken a lot of hits for their poor performance over the years. Is that the message that the Obama administration wants to send to them? Not only you got to reform yourself because you're exceeding your limits and having numerous failures, but also if some of you decide to spy, we'll release you if it involves Israel. I mean, it sends a terrible message to anyone who would consider working in the national security community that there's an exception if anything involves Israel. And that's why it hasn't been done until now. And, it would really show a level of desperation that it would be humiliating, I would think, to the United States to go there.
Well, Clayton Swisher, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
It's a pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Clayton Swisher, who's the manager of investigative journalism for Al Jazeera, based in Doha, Qatar. He's the author of The Truth About Camp David and The Palestine Papers, The End of the Road, based on 1,600 files of leaked confidential records of the Israeli-Palestinian peace talks entrusted to him and published by Al Jazeera and The Guardian in 2011. He has an article at the Huffington Post, Isn't It Time to Try Something New? And the opinions he expressed in this interview were his own, not those of Al Jazeera. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how America is rigged for the rich.